You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 27 February, NVIDIA results beat on top and bottom line after market close last night. Stock is slightly down in pre-market. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Sean Dundari from Tribe Investments SA. Results from NEPI, Rockcastle, good results, share price down. And AECI, bad results, share price up. Maybe Sean can make sense of that. BidCorp CFO David Cleasby, strong half-year results, although China is struggling as the rest of EMs do very well. John Luce from F&B Commercial Property Finance. Residential building data. We're going to dig into that. There might be some final signs of stabilization. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Barloworld shareholders vote against buyout offer. They got like half of what they needed. Analysts believe the vote was a protest about governance issues, but there was also points around the price being offered. Business Day, SARS boss resolute against tax increases. Effective tax policy hinges on good admin, says Edward Kisweta. Morning markets, US is green. Although the S&P was up less than a point, the Nasdaq up 0.2%. The East is mixed. Sydney up 0.3%, Tokyo 0.4% higher, and then Hong Kong is off 0.2%, and Tencent down 0.2%. Commodities all red. Gold futures 2,922. Brent 72.77. Platinum 971. Palladium 925. The rand is 1840. Bitcoin 84,600. Top 40 opening call 10 points or a fraction of a percent lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning over with Sean Dundari, Tribe Investments SA. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. Results coming through left, right and centre. NEPI, Rockcastle, and vacancies are at 1.7%. Net operating income up 13.2%. Loan to value 32.1%. All in all, I thought a really good set of numbers. Market didn't so much like it, sending the stock almost 5% lower. Your take on the numbers and perhaps the valuation. Perhaps the market just says this is not a cheap stock.
Morning, Simon. Thank you for having me. I think NEPI's, the results were really brilliant, in my opinion. The market's reaction to it, in my opinion, I think after, you know, such a brilliant set of results, the guidance for the 2025 year, they're looking at a growth of 1.5%. And I think that, you know, based on their showing in the past financial year, versus what it looks like going forward, maybe slightly a disappointment for the market. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if we look at the numbers come through because, you know, we've seen increased rentals. We look at companies and retail spaces opening up. Interest rates last year started, you know, tapering out. And the advantage that they have really is that post-COVID-19, actually building materials mm-hmm. and building in general has become really expensive. Therefore, for companies like NEPI that already have infrastructure and retail, industrial buildings, they are it's working out well for them because, you know, people are now forced to rent because of the high cost of actually redeveloping, you know, new buildings and as such.
I take your point, and also, absolutely, it's perhaps that forward guidance, but it is really, I mean, it's a good set of numbers, it's a good operation, and I suppose that at the heart, we can, you know, be concerned about the future, but they certainly have done well. AECI, tough set of numbers. Management talk about a year of transition and strategic investment. This was full of minus signs. The market liked it. The stock up 7.4%. The market here seems to be buying on the year of transition and strategic investment.
Yes, I think with AECI, it's a case of going backwards in order for them to actually go forward. Mm-hmm. And if we're looking at what they're doing strategically, the marketing's reacting positively to that because what they're basically doing, in my opinion, is that, you know, they're cutting out their loss-making businesses and then refocusing on what they're actually good at, namely mining and chemicals. I mean, if we were to dig deep into the actual numbers, you would look like you'd notice that the chemical business didn't do as bad as what the numbers do reflect. The mining business, I mean, it is the sign of the times. I mean, commodity prices have been under a lot of pressure, and we also have, you know, locally logistical issues with Transnet and the like, which, you know, really affects the bottom line. But if we're looking at, you know, what their view is, they're looking to double their profits by 2026. And if their strategic change goes well, we could potentially see ACI doing really well. And I think from a share price perspective, it looks like a really good long-term stock, in my opinion, to hold on the basis that once all these changes do, you know, come into play, we might have favorable upside on the stock price there.
And the thought, I mean, from the comments of Nepi, it was about the future, the forward forecast, AECR, again, forward forecast. And this illustrates the point that results are great, but they're historic. Markets care about the future. And that was deeply telling in both these numbers.
100%, Simon. I think whatever news comes out of a company, we tend to react to that. It affects a lot of market sentiment. So, I mean, we're looking at AECI. Mm. Their numbers weren't that great, as we can see. But, you know, the words coming out of the business is showing that, no, guys, we understand that, you know, the numbers aren't great, but we've got a plan in place. Yeah. And as individuals, I mean, we like to see organizations that have a forward-thinking plan, positive plan. With Nepi Rockcastle, the fact that, you know, the numbers, I mean, the NOI was up by 13.7% to a point where you say, but next year our guidance is 1.5%. What has technically changed in that, you know, interest rates are still quite stable. We're still in the same environment that, you know, people are going back into offices, etc., retail spaces. People are starting to have a little bit more disposable income due to low inflation and so on and so forth. So what is the reasoning behind, you know, lower growth after such brilliant results?
Absolutely. And that's a giant variance. We leave it there. Sean Dindari, Trive Investments SA, appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Bidcorp CFO David Cleasby. Results for 6 months ending December. Revenue up 7.1%, HEPS up 10%, dividend up 6.7%. David, appreciate the time. You're very much a global business these days, so I want to delve into some of the regions. You mentioned results, EMs, including South Africa, really having a strong period.
Yeah, I think South Africa in particular was very good. I think it was up nearly 20%. But it wasn't like that across the board. We obviously have China, which is in the mix. Mm-hmm. Although on a like-for-like basis, they were up about 8% at a profit level. If you took it on an absolute basis, they were down. So it wasn't completely across the board, but I think we had a better performance out of South America, which obviously helped, and the Middle East and Turkey itself. So other than China, the EM section did well.
You mentioned places like South Africa doing very well. We can see what our economy is doing. Are you growing markets? Are you taking market share? Are you doing some of your bolt-ons locally that help that growth?
There was a small bolt-on that helped in that period. We have continued to look and have been able to convert and are in the process of doing maybe one or two more. So the opportunity still is out there. I think it's a combination of some market growth and also our businesses basically trading a lot better. So combination of all those factors, our sentiment and a view on the ground is that there is a little bit more activity having come through the last, I guess, 9 months, and the politics has helped the market on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And truthfully, apart from the little bit of load shedding we've had in the last week or so, lack of load shedding makes people feel a little bit more happy about the world. How is Europe? You exited two of your German operations, but more broadly, how is the European continent as operations?
Well, I think economically on the continent, it is under a bit of pressure, but our businesses did, you know, particularly well. I think every one of them was ahead of the prior period, other than maybe Portugal, where is really, you know, Portugal is going through a bit of investing for growth at the moment. So it's in a little bit of transition. But, you know, given a year or two or three, we'll start seeing the benefits of that. But other than that, each one of the other geographies, the Netherlands, Belgium, Italy, Spain did particularly well, and Eastern Europe, Poland and Czech Republic and Slovakia all were good. So we're very happy with that.
You mentioned some Boltrons in South Africa. You had 8 during the period. And we have chatted before, and this is very much the sort of Bidcorp way, which is you don't do big acquisitions. You do small Boltrons for, I imagine, to maybe get some market share or perhaps certain products or something. And that does remain sort of at the core of the acquisition strategy at Bidcorp.
Absolutely. As you said, it's a case of either extending our presence into a different area or growing the range that we, you know, that we sell and bulking that up. So primarily in those two areas. But, you know, when the opportunity comes along for a new country acquisition, we absolutely will look at it as long as it's of sufficient scale and it makes sense to us in whatever geography it is. I guess other than maybe the USA, where we, you know, are very careful and probably a bit shy of investing there. We think that we probably would get a better return on our dollar if we put it into other geographies as opposed to the US at this point in time.
Yeah, I take your point on that. You mentioned food inflation has largely faded away, but you've seen cost inflation remaining sticky. And you said this is particularly wage pressure.
Well, I think, you know, the funny thing is that although interest rates have been high in many geographies, there's still quite what we would call almost full employment in many of these geographies. Yeah. So there's still competition for skills. And, you know, the big pressure we're seeing is in the warehouse operatives and driver space. So those kinds of wages are still pressing ahead of core inflation. So we're still seeing some pressure. And, you know, hopefully that will abate in the, not necessarily in the period ahead, but sort of in the periods ahead.
Are you finding it easier to pass your cost increases onto customers? I've asked you that question before in previous periods, and you said, look, sometimes you don't for strategic reasons as well. But is it easier these days to put some of those cost increases onto the customer?
You know, coming out of COVID, it was easier and inflation was a big issue. Mm-hmm. But it's got obviously tougher because inflation has basically abated. And we, you know, we don't operate in isolation. So we operate in a very competitive market. So I think it's not so much how much we can obviously push on the customer side, but I think a lot of the initiatives we're doing, and I think you've seen that in the improvements in the gross margins, is really on the procurement and making ourselves more efficient on the procurement side. And that's been beneficial, particularly where we've had cost inflation pushing ahead of revenue. So the businesses have done well, but we operate in competitive, you know, environments, and if the market's tight, the market's tight. You can't necessarily always push your pricing through.
And you mentioned there your gross margins. And that's, I suppose, where you do have the ability to manage it in that sense. And they're looking really strong. I mean, is gross margin something that's going to be sort of in flux, or do you have a target? I mean, are they going higher? Because, I mean, they're looking really, really solid.
Well, I think, you know, you've got to take it in the context of there were a number of big businesses that took the view that they were going to, you know, cut a bit of margin or sacrifice a bit of margin to maintain volume. So, yes, you get the same sort of gross dollars, but on a percentage basis, yes, you do see a slight decline. So, you know, I think there is a focus on it. But as I said, a lot of that is really on the back end in terms of what we can do from the procurement side. And, I think the margins have been stable in the business broadly on average, you know, for some time. So I think as long as we continue to, you know, focus on procurement initiatives and that kind of thing, you know, I'm confident we can hold those margins.
We'll leave there. That's Bidcorp CFO David Cleasby. Always appreciate the time. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. I mean, good set of results. I mean, they just show operational efficiencies, every set of numbers. Do you hold the stock? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Checking now with John Luce, Senior Economist, FNB Commercial Property Finance. John, appreciate the time. A recent note you put out talking around residential building data, most notably the most recent, which is December 24. But first question, residential building data, what is the data? What are we looking at? What is it trying to tell us?
Well, it's still pointing to a very weak picture. Mm-hmm. If one looks at the longer term history, and you compare it to the last quarter of 2021. So just after this, just the surge that came just after the lockdowns, we're still about 46.7% down from there in terms of building plans passed. And that's obviously the lagged impact of the interest rate hiking. We haven't, that took the levels down a lot. It's very interest rate sensitive. But there's just signs of perhaps that we're starting to move back into positive growth after the last almost 3 years of decline. December building plans passed grew by 33.13%. Hmm. Now, I have to just say I take it with a pinch of salt on a monthly basis because it can be volatile. If you just take the quarter as a whole, the fourth quarter as a whole, we're still minus 5.27% down. But it is a diminishing, a broadly diminishing rate of decline. So it looks like building planning levels are slowly but surely heading towards positive territory as we move into this year.
And I imagine, you mentioned the tough conditions post that COVID boom, low growth, high interest rates, etc. It really is a confidence thing. And if rates are high and growth is low, and well, we also had all the load shedding, of course, etc., high inflation, we're going to see pressure in this space.
Sure. When it is a very credit-dependent market, the residential market. So interest rates go up, cost of credit goes up, and demand especially by new, first-time buyers, slows quite significantly. A lot of them hang out in the rental market for longer until the rate hiking cycle is over. And there's a decent supply of property in the existing market. So it takes a bit of time for the new developments to come back. First, you have to have demand improve in the existing market. That's been happening as interest rates have started to decline mildly. And then with something of a lag, you eventually start to see the oversupplies sort of mopped up in the existing market, and then demand for new property starts to emerge.
You also, in the note you put out, which I thought was a fascinating point, long-term data, and we're talking decades-long data here, a shift towards flats and townhouses, the standalone house, and sort of the picket fence and the pool in the back, kind of reshifting away to flats and townhouses.
Yeah, about 47% of total building activity or building plans passed is now flats and townhouses. The freestanding house, especially the smaller ones. So I think those affordable freestanding houses are diminishing in importance. I think even in the affordable market, it's more about high density stuff in old CBDs and so on. Land in our and serviced land, especially with the right infrastructure, is in increasingly scarce supply in our cities. That's been coming for a few decades because of a lack of sort of general government fixed investment in infrastructure. But realistically, too, we just couldn't carry on creating urban sprawl. It becomes, eventually you run into private transport congestion problems, as we know. So we've got to densify. We are densifying, and this is the result. You're seeing it in the building numbers.
You also mentioned in the note you put out, FNB's looking at 2 more quarter percent rate cuts, and that takes prime to 10.5. I mean, this is 10.5 is a big number, but relative to 11.75, it is a big chunk lower. And this is positive just for the whole residential sector as a whole. Lower rates is just bottom line good for demand.
Look, it's mildly positive. I mean, from 11.75 prime to 10.5 is not a massive stimulus. Mm. So we certainly don't expect to see a big surge in residential building activity. But I think for this year, we go back into mildly positive growth and projections. My thinking is when this year is said and done, we'll probably have growth in plans passed and eventually, building completions too with a mild lag of, say 5 to 10%. Which is not, in GDP terms, you say 5 to 10%, and that's a big number. Mm. But in terms of building activity, that's not a big number. That's a mildly positive growth rate,
Okay, mildly positive. We'll leave it there. John Luce, Senior Economist, FNB Commercial Property Finance. Always appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We're chatting with Pietley Radin, who's yesterday at Herenia Capital Advisors. Crypto selling off. The sell-off has continued again today. We asked, we were chatting with him, why is it lower? How low can it go? We asked you if you were worried about your Bitcoin. Almost half of you said, nope, this is just par for the course for crypto. The rest was split between you buying more as it falls and some of you saying, yes, you are selling fast. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Norbuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Co-op Industrial results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.